As a woman on radio and one of the few, in fact, I was the first woman in Western Australia to do a morning, daytime, a weekday talkback interview program.
Wow.
Which I think that's how I got to be in the Women's Hall of Fame.
Welcome to Her Story, an RTRFM podcast series exploring the lives, careers and victories of inductees to the Western Australian Women's Hall of Fame. My name's Taylor Strano. I'll be with you each week as we hear stories, laughs and tears from some of the most interesting women across the state. This week, we turn our attention to the airwaves of radio's past with broadcaster and actor Libby Stone. At the age of just 22 and already a mother to one child, a random act of luck led Libby Stone to nailing her audition for the local Meriden radio station, which ultimately would be the start of a glittering career in nearly every pocket of the arts. It's episode 7 of Her Story with 2011 inductee Libby Stone. This is Her Story. Can you take us back to that time when you were a child and growing up? Do you remember having any distinct role models or people that you looked up to or as a child in school thought, oh, they're pretty great?
Actually, it's really interesting. I was quite a loner at school. I have one friend now still that I made in those early school days in first year primary school. We ultimately flattered together and we've been associated with each other's lives quite deeply for all of those years since.
How do you keep a friendship for how many years has that been now?
Oh, that'd be telling. I'd have to do some. I need a calculator for that. How many years? Gosh.
A couple of decades worth.
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
At least. 50-something.
Wow.
Maybe more. Could be 60. Yeah, it'd be 60-something years.
How do you keep a friendship for that long?
We love each other. We stay connected. We might not see each other for 6 months, but it's like yesterday. We've got all those memories of flatting together at 18, and we've seen each other through divorces and marriages and births and deaths and
the whole gamut of life.
Well, it is, yes, yeah. Yes. And we're not really like each other, but we're complementary.
What was the rest of your schooling time like?
Again, I was pretty much a loner. I thought that I wasn't particularly bright. I didn't think anybody particularly noticed me. I was doing 100% in maths, so I guess I was bright enough. And then when I went to high school, the same thing. But would you believe I'm now every year catching up with both classes, the high school class and the primary school class, every year.
Reunions?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And the high school class is a couple of groups of us that meet at different times, some women and some men. They have different memories of me than I have of myself back then. But I was really very shy.
They don't say that Libby Stone, that trailblazing actor and radio
Not
personality.
At all. No, no. Some of them don't probably even realise that it was me. I think some do now because I turn up with the name badge on and they go, oh right. What was your name at primary school? And others say, oh, I'm so glad you came. And I think, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name.
Where's your name tag? At the end of school, I mean, particularly bright at math, which is wonderful. Was study always something that you had aspired to do or complete after high school had ended?
I had no idea what I was going to do. The options were nurse, teacher, shop assistant, or secretary, or uni. In our family, girls were going to get married and have children, so education was wasted. Besides, I couldn't agree more in a way, because at that time, women that were married frequently had to leave their job as soon as they got married. So what would be the point? And I got sick of school anyway, so I left school halfway through the year 12 year and said, I'm going to sit the exam anyway, and I did, and I passed. Not with flying colours, but I passed. My father had said, because I talked about going to uni because a lot of my classmates were going on to uni, and he said it'd be a waste of money because you're a girl, you're only going to get married and have children. I was 16 years old. I didn't turn 17 until the end of year 12, so I was actually not the youngest in the class, but the second youngest.
Looking back on that, do you feel like that was the right choice for you?
I wouldn't change anything now. That's a question I've been asked many times in recent times. Would I change a thing? No, I wouldn't, because I wouldn't be where I am now.
So after high school, what did you do? What was life like after that final exam?
Well, I thought I have to do something, and shopkeeping wasn't my thing. I had worked in a greengrocery shops and enjoyed it at the time when I was 14. And then I'd worked in a pharmacy, and then I'd worked in Woolworths when we had counters. So we were called counter jumpers at the time.
Oh, my goodness.
The girls did the counter jumping. And so I thought, well, what am I going to do? So I decided to apply for a scholarship for a business college, and I won it. And I won a year at business college, but I'd finished within 4 months all that they had to offer. And they said, but you've got a year. And I said, but I finished. So I went and got a job in an office. Did a plug-in, pull-out switchboard job, as well as typing and photocopying.
Tell us, when you say plug-in, pull-out switchboard job, can you explain that to us?
It's very hard to explain. You have this board in front of you with holes and leads with plugs. And if someone rings in, you plug into that bit and answer with the headset on. Mm. And then they want to speak to Mr. Fred Jones. And you go, all right, plug into Fred Jones and say, are you available for a call? And he might say yes. So you just switch them through. Or he might say, no, I'm very sorry, sir. He's not available at the moment. Can I take a message?
How many hours a day are you pulling and plugging?
I was the relief puller and plugger for lunchtime. So otherwise I was photocopying or filing papers in a drawer.
The most glamorous of jobs.
Or typing on a typewriter that was not electric.
Okay. Did you have to do a typing course?
Yes, that's what I did at business college.
Right.
Yeah.
And you finished it in 4 months?
Yes. Shorthand typing, bookkeeping, and something else. I can't remember what it was. But it was not very challenging. There was one thing that happened when I was about 12. My parents sent me to a Commonwealth careers advisor, and I did a whole raft of tests. And he said to me at the end, you can do anything you choose to do. Mm. That has resonated with me for the rest of my life, and I've actually done that. So anything I've chosen to do, I do.
You've put your mind to it and you've been able to achieve it.
Exactly. And I think that was the greatest gift anyone can give a child, to say you can do anything you choose to do.
Mm. It's interesting, this idea of not being challenged. And it sounds like in the business world, maybe that wasn't quite where you were being challenged and you're plugging and pulling and photocopying.
Not at all.
In arts, though, every day is almost a bit of a challenge, really. Is that something that kept you satisfied?
Actually, I was introduced to the arts at high school by my geography teacher. I was the only girl in a class of boys, and he made them all wait outside while I went into the room first. And it was incredibly embarrassing.
Why was that? Is there a reason?
Manners.
Okay.
He was teaching them manners. Girls before boys. That's how it was then. As I said, I was quite shy, and he said to me, why don't you come to the drama club after school? And he was running it. His name was Ted Stiles. He was a lovely man. I wish I could have the opportunity to say thank you to him, but unfortunately he's passed. I never did see him again after school. And very soon I had a role, the role of a woman whose husband was abusive. Not within my scope in terms of life experience. That happened later. I found that I felt very at home doing that. Not about the role as such, but actually acting, connecting to another character and portraying it. And I subsequently played that role again as an adult in an Eastern Districts drama competition and won Best Actress. The actor that gave me the award was an actor named Nita Pannell, who was about 80 at the time, but she was like theatre royalty. Yes.
That would have been amazing, meeting her on stage and accepting an award from her.
I was in awe because I loved her work.
High School Drama Club, is that a moment where maybe a light went off?
No.
When did that moment come for you?
It didn't really. I did a professional show at the age of 16. It was a literal walk on, walk off. Good morning was the line. I learned to drink black coffee that season because the milk was always off. And I've never had coffee with milk since. But again, I just felt like I was in my spot. And as a young married woman with a child, married to a man who was a member of the drama club, I joined the drama club. And that was in Meriden. And I got to know a few people. One of them was the wife of a teacher who was working with my husband. She was doing an hour a week on radio. And she said to me at one barbecue or other, said, I'm going to take some time off because I'm pregnant. And I thought, I could do that. So I rang up the radio station and said, look, I'd like to come in for an audition. And they said, well, we haven't got any vacancies, but you're welcome to come. The guy that auditioned me was a fellow named John Luke, who would be well known to older listeners, if they're still with us. And he had a very distinctive voice. But he said to me, well, you've got a good voice, but we haven't got any vacancies. And then he rang me the next day and said, can you start next week?
He didn't quite know yet there was a vacancy coming.
No, I was ahead of that. And so I did an hour a week women's program. So that is what's on at the local dress shop and what are the specials in town. And not very challenging, but interesting. And got me out and doing things, and as well as being a stay-at-home mum.
Who would have known that you had to fight for a vacancy in community country radio?
Yeah.
It's a hot spot.
Apparently. Used to be so that most announcers got their start in a country radio station.
I mean, that's not dissimilar now of people who start off as young journos having to start off in the regions and work their way back in. What was it about radio that appealed to you?
I just enjoyed it. As I said, it got me out. It got me meeting people. Remember, I said that I'm quite shy. And it was a vehicle for me to interact with people. And it still is. And so is theatre. And all of the work that I do now is still a vehicle for me to interact with people, but I'm still very shy on the inside. Yeah.
You started off as a Perth girl. What was that transition out to Meriden like, if you hadn't lived out in a country town before?
Como was a bit of a country town at the time when I grew up. We had sand, not roads.
Oh my gosh, you could not say that about Como now, could you?
No, can't afford Como now. But there was a war service home that my parents had.
Sure.
Because both did service in World War II. And both survived, fortunately, because I'm here. The biggest transition was being a 20-year-old, getting married, a 21-year-old, having a child, then being a stay-at-home mum in a country town where I knew nobody. So thank goodness again for the drama club, because then I came to know people that way.
What's that like, being a stay-at-home mum in your early 20s, your first child, and you don't know anybody else in town?
It was mind-numbing. It was. I mean, we lived in an asbestos house, asbestos duplex.
Wow.
That were built for the teachers. The dust storms were horrendous because that came up all through the cracks and there was red dust on everything. And we lived, probably would have been three houses had they built them, from the cemetery. But I got involved in some local committees as well. So we set up a senior centre there. Older people that were alone could come and have a meal and play some table games and things. And I helped set up the Business and Professional Women's Club up there. I was secretary of the repertory club.
So you're a stay-at-home mum, but you're not really just staying at home, are you?
No, after about 10 o'clock, I had nothing left to do. So I had the washing was on the line, the house was clean. The next thing I had to do after that, apart from looking after the first child, I had a second child there. He's now a doctor. And my daughter's firstborn is now working in the health department in mental health. So they've done very well in spite of me because it was a real trial and error time, because I did not know how to be a mum, really.
I'm sure everybody says that about their first time as a parent, surely.
Of course, of course. And we only have the role model of our parents to go by. And my father was a life assurance salesman who travelled Carnarvon to Katherine. That was his territory. So he was away more than home. So my mother was do everything. And I think I'm do everything as well. She was also very bright, as it turned out. None of us knew until after she died that she'd been ducks of the tech school in Maryborough in Victoria. I knew that she had a yearning for art. I knew that she was intelligent, but I did not know how intelligent.
Funny how these stories about your family, your parents and your loved ones, they come out after they leave us.
That's right.
That's a conversation that she never shared, or a story she never told you, right?
She was a very private person. Very private.
It's nice to know that you have that now, right?
We do, yes. Yeah. And when I was in radio in Perth, actually before that in Melbourne, my former husband was transferred to Melbourne. He joined the Navy over there.
It's a career change?
Yes, but as a teacher.
Sure.
So he went straight in as a lieutenant. And I was then apparently obliged to behave like a lieutenant's wife. Well, I did not know what that meant. And besides, I didn't think I felt like conforming particularly because there were rules and it didn't feel right.
What kind of rules are we talking about?
We had to take our place in terms of the hierarchy. The wives took the ranking of the husband. But then we had to go to certain dinners and there were rules about what you could eat with what, like fruit had to be eaten with a knife and fork. Port was passed around the table after the meal and had to be passed a certain direction. I think it was from right to left, but I can't really remember. And we had stewards standing behind who'd put your knife and fork on the plate in the perfect way. Fortunately, my father had insisted we had table manners that we could use at Buckingham Palace. So we'd put the things on the plate and the plate would disappear as fast as you could put the things on the plate. There was just about one steward per...
They were ready for you.
Yeah. Around, and it was all a bit overwhelming, really.
So you're in Meriden, and then does that move to Melbourne happen shortly after you're there?
Yes. It was about just under a year after the second child was born.
Was it sad to leave radio and leave Meriden?
No.
Honest.
It just was, and I didn't know what to find in Melbourne, but we ended up living in a pretty awful house that had a leaking hot water system. So the house was damp. It was cold. I had chilblains on my feet and fingers. The carpet was white and the kids played in the mud and the furniture was brown.
Right. So do you prefer your red dust and your dust storms of Meriden at that
actually,
point?
Yes, yeah. I think I'm a bit adaptable.
Which bodes well for an acting career.
Oh, gosh, yes. That's a whole nother level of being adaptable.
And I want to touch on it in a moment. When you arrived in Melbourne, you're given this sort of new life, this new set of rules that you apparently have to live by. Mm-hmm. What are you doing for work?
My husband then said, no wife of mine's going to work, so I had to find out some things that I could do that didn't look like work, really.
Okay.
And I managed to get into a course at Crawford Film and Television Studio. So I did that. And I did do a few little acting jobs. Some people will remember Bell Bird. I had a little job on Bell Bird, but not a lot. Then he was transferred to the USA to study computerized weaponry. The kids and I went. That was towards the end of the relationship. I came back to Australia with the kids and lived in a house with friends in Melbourne.
All right, let's just take a back step there. Yep. You've just glazed over your first acting experience and I want to dig into it. Uh-huh. How did it come about for you?
I actually can't remember whether I had an agent or not then because it was a long time, it was over 50 years ago. not quite, 48 years ago. Again, I just enjoyed doing it. I didn't think about making a career of it as such. It wasn't a conscious thing. It was an unconscious thing. That conscious decision didn't happen till after I'd been at the ABC in Perth. A lot happened in between all of that.
It's kind of that funny notion that you're saying there of doing work that isn't really appearing to be formal, proper work, and all these jobs circle around the arts that you've been able to still do them while quietly.
Yes.
Not really
well, you know,
doing work.
You know that arts work is not proper work anyway.
Well, if you check the paychecks that we receive, Living, no, it's not.
I do. When I came back to Perth, I had been offered a job to work with a friend of mine, Jerry Atkinson, who was a fabulous actor, writer, singer, performer in general, musician. I loved him to bits. And he said, come and work with me. So I kind of managed the booking us into schools to do folk music shows. And
so you're doing music now as well?
Yes.
But what were you doing in the musical aspect?
Well, I was singing with him, believe it or not. eventually, I decided to go to uni because I could, because Gough Whitlam made it possible for so many women to go to uni for free. Mm-hmm. So many other people too, but for women it was significant. So I went to study physiotherapy because I had two kids and another one soon on the way. I decided I better get a proper job. So I turned up at Curtin Uni, it was wait then, to study physiotherapy to be sensible. And I walked past the back of the theatre arts rooms and theatre and I thought, I'll just go in and have a quick look. And I stood there on the stage and I went, oh, who am I kidding? I need to enrol in theatre arts. So I did. And that was probably the first conscious realisation that that's where I needed to be.
When you step on that stage, is it flooding back the idea of the high school drama club and then being in Meriden?
No. It was just that at-home feeling again. Okay. And the smell of the theatre. Back then we used grease paint. And there's a distinctive smell about that, even long after it's not there on the stage.
Did you tell anybody, or who was the first person that you said, I'm going to change what I'm doing at uni and this is what I want to do now?
I don't think I discussed it with anybody. I just did it. I just did it. And I did a double major, theatre arts and film and television. So I did a 3.5-year course because both were pretty intensive. So I did film directing and film editing. So I was literally editing on a flatbed, cutting the film and gluing it together.
You were in the tech side as much as you were on the screen or stage side.
Oh, trust me, that's an art. Editing's a big art.
Completely.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of patience involved in editing, I think.
Yes, very interesting too.
Such admiration for people who do that.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about what film and the television industry in Australia was like at the time while you were studying.
I had very little knowledge of the industry at the time. Only as a viewer. It was a relatively new industry. There was not a lot of Australian-made stuff. Few Australian films at the time, few TV programs. There was Division 4 and that sort of stuff. And Bellbird. Mm-hmm. That went on for a long time.
Well, you were there.
Only once. At the end of the Theatre Arts Film and TV course, I thought, I still really need to earn some money. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in the back of my mind was a reality that you don't earn a lot of money as an actor. The industry here in Perth was really quite small and closed, in my mind anyway. Yeah. So I decided, all right, now what I need to do is get a job that pays well and has security, and what can I do? And meanwhile, I also turned up to 6PR and said, have you got a vacancy? And they said no, and then they had one the next week because I was a talent agent for Leith Taylor, who was the then night announcer on the weekends. And so they said, oh, yes, well, you can come and do the show now. Leith's leaving. I knew she was.
Again, you were ahead of the curve.
Well, I was just in the right place at the right time. I'd been asked to take over this talent agency by a woman who said, I have to go and get my kids back, claiming that her husband had taken them across Australia. And she,
right.
Yes.
So you found another slot to pop yourself into. What were you doing at 6PR?
Oh, gentle on your mind. Music, 6 to midnight, Saturday and Sunday.
That sounds glorious. AM radio and music, what kind of things were you playing?
Music of the mid to late 70s. So some Neil Diamond. Gosh, that's really going back a long way.
Well, let me ask you this then. It's a question that I ask everybody that we've interviewed for Herstory. It's a question I usually leave at the end, but seeing as we're talking about music in the radio right now, when this airs both in podcast form and on the radio, we talk a little bit about some of your favourite artists and we can hopefully line some of them up. This series, we've had people tell us they love Take Me Home Country Road. We've had Nick Cave. We've had some very questionable covers of Smoke on the Water. Have you got a favourite artist or a favourite song?
Probably one of my very favourite songs is the original Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen.
The Leonard Cohen version.
Yeah.
I reckon we can pull that one out for you.
I can listen to Leonard Cohen just about any time, and there are a lot of covers of Hallelujah that are fantastic.
Well, I think it's one of the most covered songs of all time.
Probably, especially on the shows where they're looking for new talent.
Of course. It's an easy one to flex your voice on.
Yes.
All right, 6PR, you're doing the evenings, you're with people playing them music of the late 70s, which sounds like an absolute dream time.
I was there by myself. There was no one else in the place.
What was that like? I mean, that's some of the things that we don't really talk about when we talk about people on radio. It is quite isolating sometimes.
Well, certainly when you're on your own, you know, heading up to midnight. And one time I wasn't entirely on my own, I went to the back door to get the newspapers, as I'd been told to do, and I stepped out to get the newspapers and the door slammed behind me. Like,
oh, no.
Get back in.
Oh.
And I knew I had a long track on. It was a 5-minute track. And I thought, what am I going to do? There's no one here that I can't call anyone. There's no mobile phone. Didn't have one of those. Nearby was a small brick, so I broke the glass in the door and I let myself in and called the engineer and said what I'd done.
You vandalised 6PR.
I did. Not the current one. It was an older building.
I thought you were going to say you popped into a Saturday night nightclub and said, can I borrow the phone?
No.
Get out of the way.
The engineer's phone number was on the desk in the studio. I didn't think to carry it with me when I went out to get the newspapers. So at the next staff meeting, because I was the only woman, I was presented with a pink brick by the manager.
How did that make you feel?
Oh, I was feeling ridiculous about all of it anyway. So.
I don't want to pull the curtain back too much, but I feel like when you work in radio for a while, you get to learn some things about yourself, like how long a track you need to make a cup of tea or run downstairs to the bathroom.
That's right.
Do you know these things about yourself, Libby? You can time out how long it takes you to walk from A to B or
make that
cup.
Oh, I've got a great sense of time.
Yeah,
I have. Because I've also done voiceover work, and I also at one point went back to 6PR after I was fired for being a woman in the first place, because women and sport don't mix, apparently.
Okay, we have to touch back on that in a second, but finish the story.
So when I went back to 6PR, I was a copywriter. So I was writing advertising copy and doing voiceovers. So I had to know. Also writing the Daily Stars, you know.
You've pulled the curtain back too much now.
But it was well researched.
Okay.
I researched all through the various magazines that are about
what's
the stars.
What's your star sign, Libby?
I'm a Sagittarian.
Oh, typical Sagittarius, yeah.
But I believed at the time, and this has been a thread for me through all the radio and all the work I was doing, to give people a positive message. So I did all this research and made sure that I wrote something positive out of it. So I wasn't making it up entirely.
No, look, no. It was researched and then slightly embellished maybe.
Yes.
Done with inflection.
Coloured with bright colours.
Which, you know, depending who you ask, that's kind of what it comes down to anyway.
But I was only there for a little while doing that. And then the then program manager said, can you stand in for the Midnight to Dawn guy because he's off sick? And I said, yeah, I can do that. So I was on there a couple of nights, and then the day after the second night, I was called into the then manager, not the program manager, the manager of the station, and it was being managed by Barry Martin and John Watts. They were the lessees of the station. Anyway, John Watts said to me, look, we can't have a woman on our radio station, so don't come back. So I didn't have a job at all.
At that time, how many women were making radio in Perth?
There had been some. There'd been women's programs. There was one who saved me from complete boredom and isolation in Meriden. And I love Meriden, by the way. I don't want to make it sound like I wasn't stimulated intellectually doing what I was doing. And that was a woman named Leslie Anderson who had a one-hour program every day, and she discussed the news of the day. And I had great admiration for her and much thanks for what she was doing. But I told you I was looking for a job that had some permanence. And I'd done other radio stations, and I'd done news at 6KY at 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock news.
We've
start.
All been there, yeah. Yep.
So I thought, well, I'll apply to the ABC because that's secure. And so I applied and they turned me down. So I thought, okay, I'll apply again. So I did, and I did an audition. It took probably nearly all day, really tough audition, but it was a guy named Earl Reeve. So Simon Reeve is Earl Reeve's son. Mm. And Earl was a lovely guy, and he employed me. And he said, oh, I'm glad you're not an actor. I don't want to employ actors. And I thought, well, then mum's the word.
You won't be passing around the weekend play office flyers,
will not at
you?
All. And I wasn't working as an actor at that time. I did do some shows while I was there, but that was a different story. So with a little pool of 25 announcers, there were two women. There was Susanna Carr and me.
Right.
And then there was Anne Conti. So okay. There were three of us out of 25. And the headline said, women take over the radio station, women take over the ABC.
There's
so
three of you.
Three of us with very powerful women, obviously. There was a newsreader named Peter Holland, lovely guy, very, very talented guy, musician, poetry reader, newsreader, very, very good. And they had Peter lying on the ground, this newspaper setup's photo, yeah? Peter lying on the ground and the three of us standing as if we'd just killed a deer or something.
Oh, my gosh.
In victory. And I can't believe I actually did that. When I think back, where was my get up and go to say, oi, this is not okay? But I didn't think that way then. I was quite submissive.
Mm.
and tried to just be good.
Oh my gosh, there's just so much to unpack. John Watts fires you for being a woman on air.
Yes.
Which is just outright discrimination. I'm not sure if it's actually illegal at that
point. It is now. Yeah. It wasn't then, but I helped make it legal.
How did it feel to be told, we're firing you, not because you've done anything wrong, but because you're a woman?
He actually said, it's not about your work, that's fine. We just don't want a woman on our airwaves. I just felt it was completely unjust, because that has been a thread for me, justice. Very strong thread.
And you clearly have pulled at that thread. Tell me about how you helped change that legislation.
Well, as a woman on radio and one of the few, in fact, I was the first woman in Western Australia to do a morning, daytime, a weekday talkback interview program.
Wow.
Which I think that's how I got to be in the Women's Hall of Fame.
Well, you have been inducted for your contribution to the arts, specifically as a long-standing veteran of radio, of course, on screen and on stage as well. But the thing that I hope people know and cherish you for, Libby, is your contribution to radio, because it's amazing.
I think that there are people that do. Last year in the Fringe Festival, I joined a group of people who did a talk. Mm-hmm. An entertaining talk. It was Something Unexpected was the title of the talk. We had a sold-out show. Actually, it was before The Fringe. We did a second one in The Fringe. I was introduced. This is Libby Stone. She's going to talk about Something Unexpected. And I stood up and said, when I was at the ABC as an announcer, I had a producer who said, your helicopter's waiting for you down near the causeway. At the end of the show, you've got about 10 minutes to get there. It was unexpected, right? And it went on. It's a story about the helicopter taking me out to an American ship and winching me down onto the deck of the ship because it was too rough to land and, you know, a whole story. And I couldn't go, you know what, I can't do this. I did say, I'm wearing a dress, I can't be winched down. And they said, oh, we've got overalls. So I'm there in the helicopter sort of getting into the and it was an Air Force helicopter.
In the fashionable overalls, no less.
No. And then they said, there's this loop of rope here, just sit in it and then step out of the helicopter backwards and we'll lower you down onto the deck. And there was this weeny little ship down there in the water tossing up and down. And I thought, I cannot not do it, because the guys will go, ha-ha, touch a sissy.
That's the biggest eye roll ever, if you didn't quite pick up on that there, dear listener. This has got nothing to do with what we have to talk about, but I have to know now, why were you being winched down onto a ship?
I had said, you know, off the top of my head, why don't I interview some of the sailors that are coming in the American fleet? And so my producer had gone and organised a helicopter to take me out there.
Why wait for them to come to land when you can go out to
that's
them?
That's right. The deal was I would interview them on the way in. And so when we got there, the pilot said, it's too rough to land on the deck. But anyway, when I did land on the deck, on this rope.
Sort of land, yeah.
After the $8,000 Nagra reel-to-reel tape recorder that was built like a heavy suitcase, which I was terrified would fall into the water, because that would cost me nearly a year's salary then. So I started at $12,000 a year, and I thought it was fantastic money.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, as you might appreciate, announcers don't get paid a lot.
Things that you do realise, and the vast difference in pay between people who work in commercial media outlets and then community or public outlets as well, vastly, vastly different.
Oh, I happen to know that even in commercial radio, don't get paid a lot. The rates are pretty low.
They've been capped, I think, now, so people can only earn so much.
I don't know about that, but there are equity provisions for radio, because radio is covered inequity, actors and announcers equity.
Right.
Yeah.
As somebody who has lived through some of the grossest injustices, particularly paired towards women, let alone minorities in media, how do you feel about the state of Australian media now? Do you look at radio and feel like maybe it's a little bit more of an even playing field?
It's interesting, because I have had a quite interesting reaction when I've heard a woman doing an early show, like a breakfast show, and then there's a woman follows her. And I think, oh, that's different. Wait a minute. Why is it different when nothing different about a man following a man? No one thinks twice. And it surprised me that I had that response.
If that's all you were known and told, that's correct. That's a totally normal response to have. It must be nice to see that that maybe isn't necessarily always the case now.
There's a lot still to do in terms of equal power between women and men, including financial power. Still is so much to do. And the highest number of homeless people in Australia are older women, which is absolutely disgraceful. But we didn't have superannuation.
And it's so interesting. It's a conversation that's come up recently. There was a report done where Australia was ranked dead last in the gender pay gap. And when we say that, people maybe think that it's the award rate or the hourly rate. But what it's actually talking about is exactly that, Libby. It's the lack of superannuation, the lack of entitlement to leave or bonuses or benefits. And it's because women like yourself, Libby, when they were in their 20s, were told, don't go to work, just have your children. Your husband will take care of it.
That's right.
And now that age group of women over 50 are the most susceptible and at risk of homelessness.
That's right. Exactly.
How does it make you feel to know that that could have been a reality for you? You were a woman that was in your early 20s not working.
Yes, it very much could have been a reality. Fortunately, I think I've been fairly careful with money because when you're earning $12,000 a year and got two kids, you, as I did then with the kids, and they remember it well, going to the shops at about 11:30 before they closed at 12, and greengrocery and butchery always had cheap stuff out before they closed for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And in those days, the shops had actual amounts on the tins, on the products in the shelf.
Old school, yep.
No barcodes and things. And so, and I sound like Methuselah now.
But, no, you don't.
But this is how life was. And it's changed significantly. It changes at such a pace. I'd go sort of fish through the shelves looking for the tins with the lower price on because they couldn't just update the price on the older stock.
Yeah, you stretch
it down. But now, you don't know. The price is the same for everything, whether it's old or new.
You told us before about sort of being part of that decision to change the discrimination, particularly around firing people or not hiring people for their gender. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about that period of your life? What were you doing?
Well, when I was fired the second time for being a woman, I thought, this isn't right. I knew that there was a federal committee against discrimination against women. Anyway, I wrote to them and they contacted the radio station and got their point of view. And then they came back to me and said, and all this is by letter. In the mail.
What, sorry?
In the mail with a stamp on it.
Right.
And they came back and said, we find that you were discriminated against. However, there is nothing we can do about it because it was really paper tiger. They had obliged the radio station managers to write a letter of apology. So I think I probably burned it or threw it away, but it basically said, we apologise if you felt discriminated against. We didn't mean to.
If you felt, not that we have discriminated against you.
That's right. Mm. Soon after that, being on the ABC and being high profile as I was at the time, with that particular program, which was rated the top rating program in Western Australia in the 25 plus age group. The headlines in the newspaper said, Libby shows the boys how to do it. And I thought, no, don't do that. Don't say that.
Libby just does a good job. That's all it needs to be.
And, of course, it didn't go down well.
What do you feel when you see those sorts of headlines putting you in opposition against the men?
They're puerile. Mm. They really are.
Is it frustrating because it almost feels like you're being judged against a different set of standards because you're a woman?
Always. Always. It's not. The role that women play in the world is vital. We see it in so many ways. I think that the changes that we've seen for women have been really good. As I said earlier, there's still plenty to do. But the changes so far, now look at my daughters and they're working and they've got children and they've, one's got a husband who cared for the child and she worked and the other one works full time with two boys who are not so small these days. One of them's over 6 feet tall at 13. They wear what they want to wear. They wear comfortable clothes. They don't have to wear high heels. They can wear dangly earrings. You know, Geraldine Mellett, who read news on the ABC after I was there, was told, you can't wear dangly earrings while you're doing the news.
Why?
Yes.
Because they make noise or?
Possibly.
Or it's just a form of control.
Yes, yes. And there was a whole lot of time when women weren't allowed to wear trousers at work and all of that stuff. And I had to wear high heels. And, of course, all our backs are bad because we had to wear high heels. The pelvis is in the wrong place.
The least they could have done was gifted you some yoga classes at Christmas time or something.
Would never happen. Would never happen.
Do you look at your family now, Libby, and think, this has been a success? I know that they're your children and obviously you love them and you're proud of them, but seeing simple things like that that we maybe wouldn't think about, like not wearing heels to work, what a success that is.
Oh, yeah. And women have so much more choice. Women go into management levels now. So there's still a bit of a glass ceiling and there's still the attitude of, oh, a young woman, oh, she's probably going to have kids and take time off and have parent leave and so on and so forth. But I think that if there was real parent leave, both woman and man could have parent leave and share that raising of the babies. And so a young man is likely to have children too, isn't he?
It always baffles me, that concept of parent leave, or that that concept of having children is still like inherently falls on women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Well, because we actually give them birth.
That's it. So we, you know, women carry children and they birth them all. But it definitely is a two-way street.
Of course, it needs four hands and two hearts.
Oh, hopefully 10 hearts. Fingers and toes.
Yeah.
Somewhere
but
in
there. But two hearts to love them. They need, boys and girls both need mum and dad in their lives, or positive male figures at least.
I just want to change pace. Can you tell us how you would describe what your day-to-day now looks like?
Gosh.
I mean, you've already listed off what you're doing today to me, and it sounds very busy.
Well, days are usually busy. My husband and I have an acre down near Armidale. We've got chooks and we've got a toy poodle who just needs to be with us the whole time, and four rescue chooks. They all adore my husband, and I'm okay. Like, if he's not there, I'm good.
Is he the one that feeds them?
He is.
No,
and he loves that farming thing.
Sure.
That he, because he grew up on a farm. There's that. And we're building a flat under a deck that we've constructed next to the house. The house is a 1947 model.
Beautiful.
Probably received some damage during the Meckering earthquake in 1968, because it did damage houses in Perth.
Mm.
And I actually drove through Meckering that day. That morning.
Of the earthquake?
Yes.
So you remember it vividly?
I do indeed. And my daughter was a baby and I was doing the washing and, you know, a twin tub washing machine that used to dance around anyway.
Sure.
So it was doing more dancing and I thought, this is weird, and I turned it off and, oh, wait a minute, it's still dancing.
Hold down.
So there was damage in Perth and damage in Meriden. Mm. Remember I said I was living in Meriden? There was damage in the house there as well.
Wow.
So the house we're in now on the hill undoubtedly had damage.
So working at it every day then?
Yes. I basically take charge of the garden. There's about half an acre that has garden. The rest is pretty natural. And I'm helping with the build. My husband is an architect, retired during the GFC because he couldn't get work.
Mm-hmm.
And he retrained as I did. I did that degree in film and TV at Curtin, but I've subsequently done a postgraduate degree in psychology.
You decided at the age of 60 to go and do a postgrad
mm-hmm.
in psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why?
Well, again, because I'd worked as an actor full-time in Melbourne. Because after coming back to Perth, then I went back to Melbourne after the ABC because I lost my voice at the ABC. Literally lost it. For 3 years, I didn't have more than 8 minutes voice.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I had 3 years speech therapy to restore my voice.
Did something happen? Or you just one day woke up without the ability to speak for more than 10 minutes?
No, I was in the middle of a news bulletin and my voice died.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it was horrifying.
That is horrifying.
Yes.
You're speaking now?
Yes.
Which is fabulous.
Yes. So 3 years of successful speech therapy.
Yeah.
But I've got a bit of a fry at the bottom of the voice, which is not an issue, really. But it was an issue for an actor. And I'd also had a car accident that had given me memory loss for words. So my first acting job after all that was drama club. So it wasn't a job, but I treated it as such anyway. I had a 10-minute speech, non sequitur, about heraldry with wild comedy happening behind me. And I hadn't tested whether the memory would hold or whether the voice would hold.
Okay, and how did it go when you got on stage?
Worked fine.
Fabulous.
Yeah. My only problem was I was short-sighted and I couldn't wear glasses because it was a period piece. And all the guys on the stage were sort of like the same build.
Okay.
So I wasn't sure who I was talking to at the time.
Take it as a win. We call it mature age student when, you know, you're passing age of, I think it's 25 these days. What was it like going back to uni at 60?
It was the same as going to uni for the first time at 30. Mm-hmm. Look, I found it really, really interesting. After the first couple of years doing the grad dip psych, I realised that I wasn't learning anything about working with people. I was learning a lot about history and stats. Stats did my head in. It's not maths, it's just how to screw with numbers. And so I thought, well, look, I'm going to get the psychology degree and be a registered psych because then I can have an income. It's all about the income, but it's also all about helping people because the radio was about empowering people. All of the program that I was doing and the interviewing was about what are the questions that everybody listening would want to ask. And just ask questions. I wasn't there to give my opinion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I do have opinions, some of them quite strong.
It's the hardest part of the job.
Yes, yes. When interviewers just start with their opinion, I'm gone. It's not right. So I interviewed some really, really interesting people over those years. I think that they said things that they probably wouldn't have said had they felt as though they were being assaulted.
That old adage about luring more flies with honey than you've mastered that.
Yeah. Well, softly, yeah. And I wasn't there to promote me. I was there to find out.
Mm.
And I'm curious. I'm always curious.
A good radio announcer is somebody who you know and you know them well and intimately without actually ever them needing to reveal too many details about themselves.
It's a very, very intimate medium, radio. Being on air, either radio or television, is very responsible. And I was acutely conscious of that, that people are listening in wherever. They might be in bed or in their car or they might, who knows what they're doing. And I always thought that I'm talking to one person. Never thought about people in South Carolina and people in, because there were, because it was all of Western Australia. But when we went on to shortwave, there were people all over the world listening.
Sure. And now online, you just plug in a radio station's website and away you go.
As long as you have their app.
Download the RTRFM app if you're listening right now. It's free wherever you get your apps from. It makes a lot of sense, and it's very clear speaking to you, Libby, that the radio is to empower people, the psychology studies was to help people further along, and that kind of has led into other parts of your life as well. Some boards and other sort of awards and recognitions that you're a part of, they don't necessarily have to do with radio or arts or anything. I know that you're also part of the Perth Dental Hospital Board, the Heathcote Hospital Board of Visitors, and the State International Youth Year Coordinating Committee. Three very different places, even within that sentence, let alone your career.
Yeah.
Why do you feel like you still want to be involved in all these other different things too?
I still think I have something to give. And when I see people one-on-one I'm a counsellor and hypnotherapist, I never did get registered because that's another story. I now really only see people that I've seen before. I'm not looking for new clients anymore, but my husband still sees new people and he helps people stop smoking. That's his mission. But mine is, it is and has been for so very long to empower people. And I actually have a program called Step Into Your Power, which I will be doing as small groups.
Mm.
And it will be a book. It's online at the moment. And I've got a children's book called Letty's Friend about a little girl who finds her own inner best friend. And I'm writing another one with the same character, Letty, the same character, Bluey the cat. And it's about how Letty helps a little boy who's experiencing some abuse at home. Yeah.
So I'm finding with all these interviews and all these conversations that I'm so lucky to have with you all, your career in terms of film or radio maybe is not the same as what it used to be, but you are by no means slowed down in your life. You are still doing so many things.
Yes. Actually, my osteopath said the other day, do you think that maybe you should slow down a little bit?
And what did you say to that?
I said, I probably should.
But I'm not going to.
Well, once this extension is finished and we've got my sister in the apartment, then we'll finish the rest of it. I won't have to work so hard.
Mm.
We lost our friend that was working with us. He had a very bad cancer and he went early last year. His work was superb and it was a joy to have him there. He gave me the honour of editing his book called Happiness, the Ultimate Goal. Yeah.
That sounds like it's deeply personal.
Very, very, because I'd known him for 25 years, you know, and I introduced him to my husband, and who also loved him. And he was a very honourable man, very, very, very honest, which was delightful, because I sense people. And if they're not being honest, it's all wrong. Ugh, you know, it's icky. Yeah.
Yeah. You can tell.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he was always deeply honest. And we had the most wonderful conversations. And he said, you know, I can't talk to anyone else like I talk to you. I can say anything to you. And I said, yeah, of course. So can I.
Well, and the ultimate honour is for him asking you to come and edit his book.
Yes. Yeah.
How fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, Libby, the last thing that we have to touch on is, of course, the WA Women's Hall of Fame. You were inducted in the inaugural year in 2011 for your contribution, like we've said before, to the arts, to radio in Western Australia. What was the day like, or can you recall when you got that call or that email saying, hey, we'd like to induct you into this Hall of Fame?
It was like, really? What? like I said, I just sort of do things.
That's what everybody has said, by the way. Your answer is spot on with everybody else.
I was quite surprised and incredibly honoured. Mm. And I was sitting next to Diana Warnock, who I knew quite well. We were friends, and we'd been on the Women's Advisory Council together. And she'd been on the first 2 years, and I was on the second and third year. And we'd come to know each other through all sorts of things anyway, as interesting groups of women got together.
Sure.
And she said, I don't know how I got here.
And did you say to her, well, this is why you're here? And she said the same thing back to you?
No, I said, you got here because I nominated you. She said, really? Oh, thank you. She
said, wow.
Oh, I never thought I'd be on the same stage as Gina Reinhart.
But, yeah. I mean, you know, that's the scope of the Hall of Fame. There are women in so many different areas and periods of activity who are part of this Hall of Fame.
Yes.
It makes sense that you're in there. I hope that you feel that way.
I just feel honoured by it. Daisy Bates was there too. I guess I'm part of history. Yeah.
Were you one of the first three women that was allowed to speak on the radio?
Well, yes, but I was the first one to have that particular type of program. Mm. I don't think that existed for a woman before. It had been run by a man.
You disrupted the airwaves in the best way possible.
Oh, yes, I am a disruptor.
Before you let you go this morning, Libby, the name of this podcast is Herstory.
Herstory. I've always felt that history is about men fighting each other for power, and women's story is a different story altogether. Very different story. Women have a nurturing impact on the world. And I was saying to my husband the other day, have you noticed now how gentler the community seems to be in terms of our local newspaper? And he said, oh, is that because we've got a woman mayor? And I said, yes, we have a woman mayor for the first time, and the deputy mayor is also a woman.
Mm.
And so we've just had a season of arts in Armidale. Now, who would think? Because Armidale's got a different reputation. This is better.
It's like a subtle little thing that just kind of happens, and whether or not you're aware of it, it's because of women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's fabulous.
Mm-hmm. And I like to think that we've made men's lives better too.
Undoubtedly.
Mm.
And our own lives as well. And that narrative of women against women, particularly in competitive fields like arts or radio or whatever it might be, I don't like that narrative, and I think that there are lots of women out there working to change that.
I've never experienced that.
Is that because, do you think, there weren't that many women that were even allowed to be on the airwave?
Oh, well, yes, there were very few. But even working in other industries, I've not experienced that women against women.
Mm.
In fact, I've experienced women as my allies. I think that we need to support each other, but we also need to support men that want our support.
Mm.
But also to be seen as vital contributors to the community. We are vital contributors in so many ways.
Thanks to Libby Stone and all the women at the WA Women's Hall of Fame. And thanks to the incredible women who make this podcast possible. Our executive producer is Danae Gibson. Courtney Withers, Fiona Bartholomaeus and Sophie Minisale are the assistant producers. Our theme music is an original composition from Annika Moses with artwork from Peter Roebuck. Herstory is an RTRFM podcast series about women in the Western Australian Women's Hall of Fame. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Find out more at cbf.org.au. My name's Taylor Strano. I'll catch you next week for episode 8.